Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Mason. I do R&D for Muddy River Tactical. Joined today, as always, by Kevin, my brother, the owner, president, and our gunshot manager, Brett. This week, we're going to be talking about Concealed Carry 101. A very common question we get from a lot of listeners, a lot of people that come into the shop, a lot of people that call is, you know, what's the best pistol? What's the best way to carry it? What do I need to know? We get a lot of first-time gun owners that are interested in concealed carry, and even people that grew up maybe not with pistols and, you know, just doing more of a hunting and fishing background, and they'd like to know, you know, what they're looking for. This won't be the all-inclusive episode. We'll have episodes later where we really break down these topics in depth. But for today, we're going to talk about things like training, safety, gun selections, different types of holsters you can get, different carry positions, and then go into some other stuff later. So let's just start it off. And like you say on the end of all your videos, what's your famous last line on your videos?
Keep practicing and always be prepared.
Okay. And part of that is knowing your firearm and training with it. So I would preface everything we're going to say today by training is the most important thing you can do. Being familiar with your firearm, how it sits in your holster, how it feels when you carry it, not only when you're walking around, but when you're in your car. Just being familiar with that piece of equipment that you're going to be wearing on a daily basis goes a long way. And then knowing how to handle it, how to handle it safely, how to holster it, unholster it, and what to do with your firearm when you're not using it. So as far as training, do you guys have any good training exercises that you like to do or any practice?
So I think on training, you know, obviously if you're new to concealed carry, it's the first thing you should think of is training. At some point you will need or should, not necessarily need, you can train yourself. There's videos out there, but should go to an on-site trainer. They can watch what you're doing, break apart what you're doing, help you fix issues before they become bigger issues later and how you get used to doing things. But there is a lot of dry fire things you can do at home. Mantis is one of them. There's a whole bunch of different ones on the market that literally you can do at home dry fire practice that will give you repetition without having to spend a ton of money on ammo and things like that just to get, you know, on the Mantis system, for example, they got different programs where it's drawing from a holster, it times you, it just does different things where you get used to different sequences of concealed carry.
Now, is that like an app that people would download to their phone or tablet? And
yeah, so on Mantis, it's you buy it and then it downloads on your phone and the sensors and everything go through your phone. So like your phone's on a stand and the one I have, so they have different ones, but the one I have is like a training bullet that goes in there that casts the light through the barrel. There's also some that have like attachments that go on the rail, which I'm not as big a fan of those because then the issue you run into is you have to have a holster to fit that laser on the bottom of your gun, which is dumb. Then you have to buy, even if you can find one for it, you have to buy another holster, which isn't what you normally carry to practice drawing your pistol. So if you go the dry fire route, definitely get one where it's like a dummy round in the chamber where you can use your same holster and go that route.
Okay. And that would be something, you know, you could practice that anywhere. I mean, that could be in your house, like set up in your bedroom for in case you had a home intruder in the night, or like in your vehicle, you could practice getting out of your car, drawing from within your vehicle. Really a lot of versatility in how you could use that training system. But like you mentioned, though, like classes are really important because like your form is going to, when you get in a really high stress situation, you're going to fall back on your form and the techniques that you've learned by repetition. Just like we talked about shooting free throws or throwing a bowling ball or whatever it may be, going to a trainer who can see how you're gripping your firearm, like finger placement on the trigger, all those things become really important, especially when you're talking about accuracy in a high stress situation.
Well, and that, and just to put this out there too, we have a lot of videos out there, but we're not trainers either. So the info we're giving you isn't straight training either. We are in the same situation as you guys are of going to trainers, always learning. So don't take what we say as the all-in absolute. But that also goes for the trainer side. You can see different guys and go to a training class of a guy that does it one way to a guy that does it another way. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but there's different ways to do things.
And really, you should go to different trainers and get different opinions. And even if you're just taking them as a refresher course, nobody listening to this knows everything that somebody else is going to tell them, or couldn't learn something new or maybe get a little bit better.
And nobody's out of the range of making mistakes. So like go to the training part, especially new people. But if you go to dry firing and practice dry firing, it sounds like a simple thing, but make sure your ammo is not in the same room, because in a lot of this stuff, you're switching mags. It practices switching mags, which you absolutely should. Make sure you're not in that situation. Don't be doing it in your gun room with everything laying around and accidentally put a loaded mag into your gun. And it happens. I've seen it on YouTube a lot of times.
There's a really famous one, the instructor at the gun range. I think he had that revolver, and he's like, don't put your finger here, and he shot it.
Don't do this. And he tries to play it off.
Oh, yeah. That was terrible. So, and that kind of leads into the safety aspect, especially if you're a new gun owner or haven't grown up around guns. Gun safety is huge. You know, the Ten Commandments of, you know, firearms is number one. Treat every gun like it's loaded, I believe, is number one on every list. Number two, don't point it at anything you don't want to kill, so on and so forth. So that safety aspect, and if you're going to have a gun, you know, you should probably also, and, you know, we'll get into more of this later, but, you know, have a safe, have something to keep it in while you're not around. You know, you could have somebody break into your house. I mean, you could have kids, you could have anything happen where somebody could get access to your gun. So having a good safe and like ways to secure them is pretty important too.
For sure. I would also remember that the only real safety is between your ears. I mean, you can have a safety on your gun, you can have it in a locked box. That's still going to be a dangerous weapon, no matter what. So you have to use your brain and point it in the right direction. Muzzle, you know, make sure your muzzle's in the right direction at all times. Like Kevin said, make sure you don't practice with your ammo right next to you. There's just a lot of things that you have to think about.
Absolutely. And on those firearms, you know, keeping it safe, keeping them clean is really important too. So after you shoot them, you should know how to disassemble your weapon. You should have a decent cleaning kit for it, not only for the life of the pistol, but for the functionality of it.
Well, and also when you get these pistols, when they come, what is it technically? It's not packing grease. What is technically in those pistols?
It just depends on if they're shipped from cross seas. If they're shipped across seas, they have a lot more grease and a lot more oils built onto them because they're in a shipping container on the ocean, I mean, for months at a time. So you get, you know, one made from Turkey, you're going to have to clean it. You're going to have to wipe it down just so you can handle it first off. And the insides, like Glock, will use their own special grease on their slides.
It's more grease than the oil that you would normally see in a gun.
Yeah, the more oil you have on a gun, the worse it's going to get eventually, because every time you shoot a handgun or a long gun, there's always unspent powder. There's unburnt powder, and that unburnt powder goes inside your gun, sticks to grease, sticks to oil. It just creates a problem. So you want to make sure to break it down, clean it, put it back together. And then as you're breaking it down and cleaning it, you're learning your weapon first and foremost. That's the best thing.
And as far as like the grease and, you know, lubrication, like a little's good, a lot is not better though, because it's just a magnet to attract that dirt and powder and everything in the environment.
Yeah, I use a kind of a wipe it with my fingers method. I use a really thin layer of grease on there, almost where you can't see it, but it is there. That's kind of what I do.
Okay. So we talked about it, you know, briefly, but like securing your firearm while you're away, there's a lot of safes that people can get that mount to your nightstand. Like a lot of people want a gun right by their bed while they're sleeping. They've got some that are biometric, some that have, you know, different combinations you put in. Do you guys have any recommendations on safes that you guys like that are maybe compact, maybe not the big 18 gun safe to hold all your rifles, but something like for a concealed carry weapon?
For me personally, I like the, I won't get into different brands. There's a bunch of them, but like the hidden cabinet ones, like I got them in multiple rooms of the house that people would never know that's what it is. So it's always there. Like if I go home and I'm playing with the kids, I'm not going to have a gun on 90% of the time at the house, you know? So then they're around, they're where you can get to them. But the other cool thing about them is they all have like the magnet locks or whatever on them. So they are still locked, but you can put it in there with your holster and everything. and just set it in there, and it's still secure from the kids. I have small kids. You know, Brett has small kids. You have small kids. It keeps it away from who you don't want it, but it keeps it in different areas. Like, say, our house is a longer house. If I'm at one end of the house, you don't want a gun all the way at the other end if you ever had to.
Right.
So it gives you some options on what you can do with it. There is also the fingerprint safes and different things like that. The one thing I always worried about those, and maybe it's because I've had the cheaper ones because I've been cheap and bought them, but they would work with your fingerprints sometime. And then sometimes mm-hmm. you go to them, and that just worries the hell out of me as far as if you ever needed it for a home intrusion situation type of thing. I feel more confident with it the other way.
Yeah.
I have the fingerprint, not the fingerprint type, but you use like four fingers and you just use a pattern instead of using numbers that whether it's an easy number that you're going to like your birth date or whatever that you'll never forget that can be guessed by your family member because they know your birth date or they know your kid's birth date. I use just a finger pattern is what I like to use at home. I mean, it's, and also a metal gun cabinet that you can hook a cable to or something like that so it doesn't walk away.
And I've seen some of them that are portable too. Well, portable, like a portable safe, kind of like the, you know, mm-hmm. The billing ball joke. Oh, you bought me the portable safe so the thief can steal at their convenience. But like, they've got the ones that you can lock into your truck so you can take it with you and chain it. Like if you're going to go into a sporting event or a government building or somewhere where you couldn't take it with you, they've got some options like that as well that you could really stay in budget and get something that may work for multiple places.
100%. And that's where those, like the picture ones, like I'm talking about, are cool because not necessarily that nobody would ever figure it out, but the chances of somebody going through your house quickly and checking every picture. I mean, the ones I have don't look any different than the other pictures on the wall.
Yeah.
So it just, it's hidden, but not where somebody's going to try to get it, even if they wanted it.
Okay. Now let's get into gun selection a little bit. And I know, you know, we've breezed upon this before, and again, this won't be all encompassing, but as a new gun owner, like what's the number one thing you would tell people, Brett? Like they're coming in, they've never had a gun. What are they looking for in their selection?
Well, the first few questions, I'll just go through them real quick. First question is, what is the intent of the gun? Are you going to carry it, or are you going to keep it in your nightstand at home in a safe or whatever that may be? And the reason I ask that is because if you're going to leave it at home, you'd want a 15, 17 round capacity on a handgun because, let's be honest, in a stressful situation, you're going to miss. Everybody's going to miss. No matter how much you practice, law enforcement miss all the time. It's an unfortunate circumstance. The other thing is if you're going to carry it, they're starting to get packages now that, you know, just 15 round, 17 round in a carry size gun. But it's not maybe as accurate or as fun to shoot. So if you, they're just different circumstances that you want to look for. So that's one of the first questions I ask.
Okay. And part of that too is also the extra round count adds a little bit more weight, which is a little heavier on your belt and mm-hmm. takes a little bit to get used to. And it, you know, kind of flip side of that, if you are going to have a firearm with a limited magazine capacity, then you might look at getting a mag carrier or two. Premise.
It also depends on if you're strong, if you're going to do a revolver, a semi-auto, if you can pull the semi-auto back, you know, the strength goes into it, ergonomics goes into it. There are a few factors, and then training, going right back to that safety side of it, training. If you've ever shot a handgun, if not, you know, all that does play. So if you want a safety or no safety,
yeah,
there's a lot of questions.
Well, and then you get into the, there's a whole debate, and it's probably not for today, but, you know, do you carry one in the chamber or not? You know, revolvers, there's always one there, but some people carry, you know, without one in the chamber.
I mean, I'm still uncertain on that one myself sometimes, but I know I need to.
Yeah, and
a split second does matter.
Personally, like, I don't want to say I'm bad about it, but I prefer not to have one in the chamber 90% of the time because you're probably not going to need it. Now, when I worked armed security, I always had one in the chamber because it was just a different type of situation. Mm-hmm. So, and it may be different, but I would say whatever you're going to do, get used to it. That way you don't just assume there's one in the chamber. And if you need it, you're
going to shoot. How do you carry, Kevin?
With one in the chamber, I think you're always going to be better. in all honesty, it's just what you get used to. No different than safeties or no safeties on a gun. There's people that come in and are adamant they want a safety on the gun, which is perfectly fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you have to train that way. If you're used to carrying a gun with no safety, no matter how much you train, and then you're carrying a gun with a safety on it, the chance of you remembering that safety when you need it is slim to none.
Mm-hmm.
But just like, you know, you, for instance, Kyle, you've been in armed security in the past, but now up until you came here, you're kind of out of it for a while. So your comfort zone from where you were when you carried a gun all the time is different than what it is now, which is why you're on the 90% not carrying in the chamber side,
mm-hmm.
which is 100% okay. Because if you go online, and it's me too, I'm going to tell you to carry one in the chamber, but there's guys that are like, that's the absolute, that's what you have to do. Well, there's nothing that's absolute that you have to do it. The key is get enough training and comfortable with it where it's comfortable for you. And after enough training, you will get to that point, which is where you need to be.
No, I would totally agree with that. And yeah, just from the safety aspect, like you said, making sure you know what it feels like. If it does have a safety, how to turn it on and off. And, you know.
And not all safeties are the same. They all feel different or different. You know, some are bigger levers than others and
different spots, maybe even. Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's all different things that go into that. That it's, and that's what we talked about the other day is, not every gun's the same. So what you practice with the most should be what you carry, which is hard sometimes because then the smaller guns aren't as fun to shoot. But if that's what you're going to carry, be familiar with that gun, not the gun that you're practicing at the range.
Exactly why I ask that first question every time. Mm-hmm. What is your intentions? Because if you're going to carry it, then that's what you need to buy. And that's what you need to practice with. That's what you need to shoot. If you're just going to put it in your nightstand, it's just two different animals. It just really is.
And there's enough guns on the market now that can fit both of them, but there's definitely a separation in there. The ones that fit both of them are kind of the fine line between the two, I feel. Mm-hmm.
Kind of those mid-sized pistols.
You know, even the X-SIG X-Macro, you know, it holds 15, 17 rounds, whatever. It can be used for both. It's still a carry pistol. It's small enough to carry, but what people consider small enough to carry changes by individual and by individual. So on the gun shop side, the only thing I'd add to what Brett said is there's definitely the difference between the two, but get one, if you're on the concealed side of that, get one that fits your hand good enough that you are going to practice with it.
Yeah, if you're not comfortable, you're not going to pick it up to protect yourself.
Yeah, I can almost promise you, and this sounds terrible because it's not a bad gun, but like the LCPs and stuff, they are hard to shoot. Somebody that's a good shooter, they are hard to shoot.
Well, and you get people like Mom, for example, who's, you know, I'm not saying Mom's old because she'll kill me, but, you know, people that may have arthritis grip problems, to rack one in the chamber with a slide is hard for a lot of people, and that's mm-hmm. where a revolver may be a lot better option for somebody like that.
Well, and people come in and they try it, and it's more of the time it's guys that bring their wife in and hand them a gun. Here, see if you can work it. And she's struggling to do it and finally does. He goes, oh, yeah, she can work it. I'm like, well, she can barely work it right now
mm-hmm.
with just the pressure of you looking at her. Well, if she really needs it, she can't work it.
Right. And the more you shoot them, the looser the slide gets and the easier they are to operate. And there's also, you know, just methods where overhand racking the slide versus everybody wants to try and pinch it with their thumb and their index finger and pull back. Well, that's a position of weakness. If you grab it from the top and slide the whole thing, you've got the inside and all four, inside of your palm and all four fingers racking it back instead of just trying to pinch the back.
That comes back to the very first topic of training. That's exactly what training does for you. It helps you with your leverage of that firearm, you know, because that's what you're using is you're using leverage to rack that slide. And if you're not trained, you don't know how to do it, then you're going to struggle.
I was never that way before, but the more I've shot over the last, I mean, really the last year and a half, more than any, I started using the front serrations all the time, mainly because of the optic. I shoot a lot of optics. You know, yes, you can rack your gun off the optic if you want to. It's not what I want to do.
Come on, it's tactical.
Yeah, I can knock it off my boot or whatever. But yeah,
your belt.
Yeah, if you had to. But the front serrations on a lot of these guns are what I kind of rely on. So that's what I do. So if I went to a gun that didn't have front serrations, it wouldn't work well for me.
We joke about that, racking off the optic, but if you got shot in your left arm or your right arm,
yeah,
you're going to have to know how to be able to rack that slide if you need 100%. A protector.
And that's something you should probably train on, too. Not many people ever train offhand, if I had to guess, and if you know the people at home are being honest, a vast majority of people never shoot weakhand.
It's uncomfortable. Yep. You know, you just don't want to do it because it's uncomfortable.
And the other thing, too, because all the pistols I have bought, none of them are optic cut. So out of all the pistols I've ever shot, none of them are optic cut. And I start looking, just like in your office the other day, down the deal, and it's like trying to find the angle that you're holding this thing, and I'm trying to duck my head into it. And it's like, no, you got to keep your head up and bring the gun up to it. And so for me, that's never shot one with an optic, that's going to be a learning curve just to get familiar where mm-hmm. you bring it up and you're on target.
Going from optic to no optic is a big learning curve for sure. And even now, I'm so used to... The guns I carry have optics on them. I'm used to optics. If I go back to a gun that doesn't have an optic, I'm going to have to do the same amount of training again to get back used to it. The target acquisition between an optic and iron sights is different.
Yeah.
Now, and again, I'm not a trainer. I can just speak just briefly to the little bit of, the training we had doing security. The Kansas City SWAT team commander said he teaches everybody at first, you do cowboys and Indians. So when you draw your pistol, your index finger's going down the side of the slide. And if you just do cowboys and Indians, and as you're drawing, point with your finger and then drop it onto the trigger, you're going to be pretty close to center body mass, mm-hmm. just naturally.
Yeah, you're going to be right there. From a concealed carry, you know, self-defense, statistics say everything's within 7 yards, generally, which is close. You can hit somebody's torso with that method, without a doubt.
Okay. So we kind of talked about the different firearms, and which leads into different carry styles and what holster is going to be best for you. That's another, you know, we kind of brushed on it before. What's the best holster? Well, the one you're going to wear and the one that's comfortable and the one that fits you the best.
Our holster's the best holster.
Agreed. Yeah. One from Muddy River Tactical is the best, though.
So. Yeah. Well, the cool thing about us, though, is we offer everything. So that's why I say it all the time and people think I'm joking. It's like, well, we got what... No matter which situation you're in, we got something for you compared to where a lot of these companies only have Kydex holsters. They don't have leather or only have whatever, hybrid holsters. They're going to convince you that that's the best thing. Well, none of them are the best thing for anybody. So with us offering multiple different things, it allows people to have options without us being biased on what we tell them.
So and that kind of leads into, like we were talking about, most people, they start off with a leather holster. And before I started here, I'd had leather holsters and they were thick and hard and like they just really weren't that great, I don't feel like. Our buffalo hide leather holsters, they're soft, they're incredible. I mean, they fit snug to the gun. And that's how a lot of people start off when they're first going concealed.
Yeah, so if somebody emails me, most of the people that email are people brand new to concealed carry, which I'll help anybody. Like I said, I'm not a trainer, but we've done this enough and I've talked to enough people over the years. I figured out a lot of things. If no different than I always use the wristwatch as an example. If you do not wear a watch and then try to wear a watch one day for it, it's going to be weird for the first week. You're always going to be jacking with it. Holsters are the same thing no matter what. If you go, it don't matter how small a gun, whether you get the smallest LCP you can get or the M&P 5.7, the biggest thing you can get, it's a foreign object that you're putting inside your waistband no matter what. When you put it there, it's going to feel weird for a week or two. You know, it takes time to get used to it.
And there is going to be a guy or gal that just can't get used to it as well. So, and that is okay. I mean, that's why there's so many options.
Yeah, and it's not for everybody. But generally speaking, the leather, what I tell people is we make our leather holsters as a budget, what I would consider entry-level holster. They are designed for everyday concealed carry comfort. With that, there's arguments on all sides of things, which I agree with some of them and then kind of don't on some of them. But the guys, you know, Kydex stays open, easier to reholster, more retention, different things like that. I get it. But in a real world self-defense situation, I don't care how much training you have, if you have to truly use that gun to defend yourself, the last thing on earth you are worried about is reholstering that gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, you can make the argument all you want, but statistics don't lie.
You got all day.
Yes. When the cops show up, you could get all the cops that show up to shootings. 9 out of 10 times, they have to tell that person to put their gun down on the ground. Or they put it down on the ground when the cops show up.
Yeah, which you should. They're not going to let you reholster that gun and put it back on your side while they're trying to figure out what's going on.
So to think that you're going to be like a movie guy and go use your pistol to defend yourself, put it back in the holster and just be walking around like nothing happened when the cops showed up, is just statistically not going to happen. So that debate on the leather holsters for me kind of goes out the window. Where it does matter, though, is the training part of it. So if you only have a leather holster and then you're going to the range to train, to draw from your holster, which you should, it don't matter which holster you got, it makes that harder because it's a little harder to reholster. It's going to make your training different, but I don't think it makes your...
Every little bit of everyday life it does. If you go into a bank where you can't carry your gun, taking it on and off, that type of scenario... Is something to be mindful about.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a make or break, but it might be.
Yeah.
The comfort is really what matters in that.
And there's people that have carried guns forever and practice with them and only carry it because of the comfort. But if you're looking at just the straight aspect of what's the easiest thing to start with and give yourself the most success of getting used to it so that you can progress, the leather is going to get you over that hurdle faster. So that, like we talked about, so that you're more comfortable carrying one in the chamber, so that you're more comfortable doing things until you get to a Kydex holster.
So do a lot of people, like when they start carrying, like people have pants that fit them the way they are. Do people have to get larger pants sometimes to accommodate them? Just depend on the gun or?
Sometimes it just depends on what kind of pants you wear. I mean, if you wear skinny jeans or something, yeah, you're going to have to. But for most people, the guns now are so small in the big picture. Like even the bigger guns are an inch thick, you know, like the macro, it's only an inch. Most people have that much room already. It can make a difference, but not as much as the old days of it being an inch and a half wide pistols.
Well, and I can tell you from even our models, and our models for our holsters are slightly wider than the gun for reasons, you know, for fitment and stuff. But even like my widest model is like, not even inch and a half. I mean, it's pretty narrow, you know, when you really think about the big picture of trying to fit something in there.
Yeah, and when you're talking about inside the waistband holsters, which is what I always would, for the concealed carry market, that's what I would always suggest. Yes, you can wear an outside holster and conceal it certain times of year, sweatshirt, coat, stuff like that. Other than that, it's super hard. You know, if you're in shorts and a t-shirt, it's hard to pull off an outside holster and be really concealed all the time. And, you know, then it goes into open carry, which I'm not a fan of at all. People do it, and I guess it depends on what area you're in, because there's areas of the country that everybody open carries. It's kind of normal.
Mm-hmm.
Those places, it wouldn't matter. But most of the country's not that way. So I feel by open carrying, you make yourself a target before anything ever happens.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You're drawing attention to yourself unnecessarily. And, you know, if you are in a store and a shooter comes in, who do you think the first guy he's going to go for is the guy with the 45 strapped on his hip that's clear?
Well, the other thing is, if you look at the news, the media, the everything that goes on now, there's two sides to everything. There's always going to be the people that don't like it, whatever. Us as gun owners don't need to draw unnecessary attention to something for no reason, in my opinion, if that makes sense. Like, why? You're putting yourself in a tactical disadvantage already, so you're not helping yourself as a concealed carry owner. Why would you draw attention of even other people? Because then they're looking at you. Maybe they're not gun people. Then they're looking at you, which brings more attention to it. The whole point of concealed carry is not to bring attention to it.
Yeah.
So... the belts, what belt you have, is that going to make a difference on your comfort in concealed carry and the stability of the platform?
Greatly. It's one of the most overlooked things. I would love to tell you the holster is the end-all be-all because we're a holster company, but it's not. It's your whole setup goes into that. Belt is one of the main ones, though, because there's people, and I always refer to them as Walmart belts. That's not a slap at Walmart. That's just a, that's where most people buy their belt, the $8, $10 belt. And if you grab that belt, it's so flimsy, it's just falling over on itself. It can't support itself. How do you think it's going to support barely your pants, but then the weight of a weapon? Because even if you get the smallest gun out there, like what, SIG 365, just say a SIG 365, 18, 19 ounces. By the time it's loaded, you're at 24, 25 ounce gun.
That's 2 pounds. Well, yeah. Roughly pound and a half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're adding that much weight to it. So it not only supports it, but it makes it more comfortable because you can adjust that where it's not sagging on your pants or not being like getting used to a holster like we talked about. If it's sitting there and you can tell it's pulling your pants down in that one spot, you're going to be always grabbing at it, always doing something, which goes back to the drawing attention to yourself that you don't need.
That's the thing I like about our core belts that we sell now. I've got one on and I love it because they have the such micro adjustments. You know, your typical belt's got, what, an inch, inch and a half in between belt loops. Like, they're pretty far apart. And these have individual, like, ratchet clicks on there.
Yeah, it's quarter inch increments on there. And you wouldn't think that would make a huge difference, but it really does because if your belt's too tight, it makes it uncomfortable. If it's too loose, it's not supporting it. So at quarter inch increments, you can get it to where it's not only comfortable, but supporting at the same time. And if you're like most of us, your weight goes back and forth. So one day you may be at this hole and then the next day you're at that hole.
Go to the all you can eat buffet and you might need to put out two or three.
Yeah, exactly. It lets you do it. But the other thing about the core belts for us is belts and sizing is always hard because you can, no different than pants. Like I got different pants at the house that are just say a 36 and then some are a 38 or whatever, and they fit the same. Well, belts ain't no different. So if somebody comes and goes, I wear 36 pants, but if they're technically what another 38 would be in another brand, well, which one's right? So we would send so many belts out, our old belts that we used to make, and exchanges and barely not right, too much tag length. With the core belt, you cut it to where you want it so you can control not only the size but how much of the tag end of the belt's there and all different things like
that.
And
when you say cut it, I think people might get scared initially. You still got a good, what, 4 or 5 inches of play? Like, there's a ton
inches,
of...
Is it 10 or 12 inches?
It's a ton of play on the end of this.
I think it's like 10 inches of micro adjustment, so it's a ton.
Yeah, then that's when I got mine. I was kind of like, man, I'm nervous. And I looked, I was like, oh, I can gain a bunch of weight or lose a bunch of weight. You know, kind of shoot for the middle and you're going to be set.
Well, and the other part is they think, oh, I'm going to have to cut it. They think that they're cutting a fine edge. The way that happens, you could rough cut it a zigzag with scissors. The way their buckle goes over it hides your cut. So, I mean, literally, you can take a pair of scissors and cut it. It's not like you're making a custom edge on it. Cause people are like, well, I can't cut good enough to make a good edge. Mm-hmm. Well, it's all being hid under there. It's not a problem at all.
Yeah. I cut mine. I think it was with a pair of not great scissors at the house and it looks perfect. Like it came that way.
What? 2 minutes by the time you cut it and get the buckle on it, it's 2 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean, it's tops. A super simple process.
All right. The other thing too, and when people are ordering their holsters, there's a wide variety of different belt clips that make a difference too. So some of them are the standard clip. Some of them are a tuckable clip. It's kind of like a strip of plastic that comes up and over. We've got a metal Ulta clip that'll clip onto more fabric. So like yoga pants, joggers, sweatpants, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So the tuckable clips, like what is the reason for the tuckable clips?
So the tuckable clips will fit belts up to 1.75 inches, but the main thing about it, they're for people that want to tuck in their shirt to conceal their gun. And I will stop right here and say, before people think, most people cannot do that. I'm just going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. There's not a ton of body types that allow that. So me personally, I can't pull it off and conceal a gun by tucking in my shirt. I just can't do it. So I'll just put that out there because people think, oh, well, that's a good option. Well, it's only a good option for certain people that can pull that off. If you can tuck in your shirt without a gun and think you have enough room, then maybe. But most people, that's not a possibility.
Now, that's got to affect drawing the firearm as well. So the gun's completely concealed. So if they're going to draw it, they have to pull up their shirt first, then draw it out.
And it's kind of the same process. It just goes back to the training thing on what you're used to. So going to the range and training, just say you got an outside the waist holster that you're using at the range, make sure you're practice, if you're carrying with an inside holster, make sure you're practice drawing with that in clothes that you would normally wear day to day, whether it be a hoodie or whatever. How you grab and pull up on your whatever garment you got can make a difference.
So on these concealed holsters, where are most people wearing them? I know you hear all these different positions. Like what?
The most common and where most people start is, I'd say, 4 or 5 o'clock if you're a right-handed or whatever it would be on the left-handed.
So for the people at home that may have no idea what you're talking about, 4 o'clock, is that behind
right behind your hip.
Right behind your strong side hip.
Yes. And that's the most common because when you bend over, it's not in the way. You know, if you carry anywhere in the front, when you bend over, you're bending into your gun, or your holster has to contour with your body. So it's pressure against your body. It's just more comfortable for most people to get used to there.
And your body's kind of almost got a negative space in that area anyway. So it kind of helps keep the grip of the firearm from imprinting on your shirt as much because it's kind of tucked closer into your body.
Yes. Yeah, so at just say 4 or 5 o'clock behind your strong hip, the best way to do it is just like all of our holsters have the adjustable cant. So you can put the adjustable cant up to 15 degrees, which pulls that grip upwards, which also makes it easier to conceal, but also it makes it a more natural draw cycle. If you try to reach behind your hip and draw straight up, it's not a natural movement, where if it's angled at 15 degrees, you got a natural draw that way.
Okay. No, that honestly does make a lot of sense. And there's also a big trend that, you know, we're getting ready to work on, you know, a little peek under the covers, getting some appendix holsters out one of these days.
For sure.
People, do they naturally kind of progress to appendix, or is it a select body type that does that, or is it a little bit of everybody?
It's a little bit of everybody. It can work for everybody. It depends on a lot of factors. The main one that I see being an issue for more people than what their body shape is their pant ride height. You know, there's certain people that if you notice their pants ride lower. If their pants ride lower and it's like below your belly button by much, if you're overweight at all, you got like, what would you call it? A tactical spare tire or whatever you want to do. It's pushing the gun out. So if your pants are low, the top of your gun's right on that. So generally speaking, even people that are totally in shape or appendix carry, when you appendix carry, the higher your pants are, the more comfortable it is because it gets it out of your bend point of your legs and everything else. And when you bend over, it makes it bend with the torso of your body instead of at your hip joint where it bends into itself.
Not getting pinched in a taco.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I've never carried appendix. I like 4 or 5 o'clock myself because getting in and out of the truck. It's not in the way of my seatbelt. I can lean back comfortably, and my fat gut doesn't lean over it sitting in the truck. Is that something you can get used to riding around, or is it still pretty hard?
You could get used to it. It's just you got to be committed, I guess, is the best thing to put it. There's people that are way more committed to concealed carry than some people. And I think a lot of that's the people that carry like Glock 17s and big guns because that's what they train with. They are going to shoot it way better, so that's what they want to carry. With more power to them, that's great. But they're more dedicated to get used to it, whereas somebody that's just not necessarily training with it is going to give it about a week and be like, oh, that's not comfortable. You know, they won't try hard enough to make it work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But overall, like if you're talking about getting in the truck and stuff, a lot of people that truly train a lot go to appendix carry. And it's for a variety of reasons, but you can imagine, like, say, sitting in your truck. If you have your seatbelt on and you're at 4 o'clock and somebody's at your window, how easy is it to get your gun?
Oh, yeah, you're like, hold on, I'm trying to lean forward. And
It's not easy at all. Appendix carry, it is, I don't care if you're standing, sitting, it is always there and is going to be by far the quickest draw that you can get.
Not only the quickest, but your body movements or a lot less. If it's appendix, you're just moving your right arm or left arm, whatever hand you are, and you're just moving that hand down, grabbing it, moving your shirt, and pulling it up if you need it. If it's on your back hip, you got to move your whole shoulder, arm, elbow, everything behind you, and the person that you're trying not to show that you're getting ready to grab your gun, they're going to see it, You know, there's just a lot of keys to appendix, but it takes, you know, dedication, like Kevin said.
You got to be committed to that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, at appendix, your pistol is more protected all the time. If you figure at 4 o'clock and you go to bend over to grab something in the store or whatever, it's not, even if it's not visible, it's easily grabbable. Whereas no matter what, if a threat or anything's, you know, not every confrontation's a gunfight. You got to think about that too. So if you're on the ground or something, getting your pistol from 4 o'clock's harder. Just from a tactical advantage point, you got a lot of benefits from appendix carry.
Okay. And we had kind of started going down the road about talking about being in your vehicle. And Brett, I'm going to let you talk a little bit on this. You deal with a lot of law enforcement that comes through, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. So when I was trained by the guy that trained me on concealed carry, he's like, look, you're going to get pulled over one of these days. You're going to have your pistol. The guy recommended us that you roll down the window, and when he comes up, you say, officer, just so you know, I've got a concealed weapon, just so we're all on the same page. He recommended having your hands on the wheel. When he came up, and just tell the guy. And what he said is most cops will tell you, if you don't show me yours, I'm not going to show you mine. And then you proceed with your interaction. From the dealings you've had with law enforcement, how do you know what their thoughts are on pulling over people that are concealed?
It's 50-50. I'll start with what my feelings are on the situation. I don't tell them. And it's not because I'm trying to hide anything. The last thing I want to do is make they're already nervous. Every traffic stop is a risk to them. They're putting their life at risk. Why would I tell them I have a gun on me right away? I mean, that the very first thing I'm going to do is tell them I have a gun on me. So they're alert. They're already more alert now that they know that I have a gun, possibly that I could reach for it any time. So in their mind, they're not just stopping me for my speed or blinker out or anything. Now they're watching every movement. So if I go to reach to grab my insurance card that they tell me to grab, what if it's a nervous cop that just started and he pulls his gun out and shoots me because I told him right away that I had a gun on me? And I know that's a what-if scenario, but there's two ways. If it's a seasoned officer, they read the people. That, you know what I mean? If you tell them you got a gun, they're going to ask you to put your hands on the steering wheel, this and that, don't reach. Exactly what you said. Don't show me, I won't show you mine. Scenario. But we're living a different world. I mean, I don't know how long ago it was you went through that training.
Oh, it's been 15 years ago.
I would venture to say that that's not what they say anymore. I would venture to say now it's you just go through the traffic stop like you should. You know, just do what they tell you to do and move forward.
And the other thing, too, is, like you said, it was a different world. That was when we talked about it, concealed carry was just starting to get really popular.
I mean, if you think 15 years ago, that was before concealed carry was a huge thing.
Yeah.
So back then, somebody having a gun was not normal. Nowadays, to like what Brett said, you having a gun is 100% legal and you haven't done anything wrong. What I mean?
It's also a new law, concealed carry state. Now, Missouri is, same with Kansas. They prefer you to have your gun hidden in your vehicle and they don't want it out in the open for it to be seen. How you do that, it's up to you, obviously, but it's just a different world. You know,
I would say what would matter most would be how you react. If you're carrying a gun, you're not doing anything wrong, and you have the right head on you, which you should if you're carrying a gun, and just act normal, nothing's ever a problem. You know what I mean? But if you're have a gun, they know you have a gun, and then you're, I don't know how else to say it, but being an asshole and not letting them do their job, it makes you look like one of those people that they have to deal with every day and doesn't shed you in a good light. You know, don't be the argumentative guy and everything else.
Oh, for sure.
You know, there's a way to act. And unfortunately, what you see a lot of times and where police get a bad name, like if you look at all the different videos all over the internet, it's the guy recording stuff for no reason, absolutely no reason.
He's stirring the pot. I know my rights.
Trying to get a reaction. Mm-hmm. Well, don't be that guy and you won't be in that situation. First of all, there's no reason to be that guy, but definitely don't be that guy with a gun. Like, you know, I mean, if that's your reaction, carrying a gun should be a responsibility and should be the last resort of everything. But if you're that confrontational about somebody trying to do their job, if you get in an argument with somebody, are you going to shoot them? I mean, no, you shouldn't. You know, so why are you...
Now, don't get us wrong. We believe in our rights.
Yes.
We believe that the cops, on the other hand, should not be trying to push our rights away from us either. So we're not getting into that debate right now. So those videos are both ways, but I agree with you. They're out there to push the issue, to get views online. Yeah.
Most of them are the clickbait getting views online that are going and doing stupid stuff intentionally to get a reaction out of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, don't be that guy.
Another thing that's really important is when you're concealed carry, you can't be drinking alcohol. To the best of my knowledge, if you're concealed carrying a pistol, you can't have any alcohol on board, is at least what they told us going through our training. Do you know if that's still the case? Me personally,
I don't know legal advice. I don't know if that's the case.
We're not lawyers here. Let's just put that out there.
But me personally, if I'm drinking, I ain't taking my gun. It just puts you in a bad situation because no matter what, I mean, if you look, just talking about police, yes, there's a bad apple and everything. I'm not saying every police video is right or whatever, but there's police officers that go on trial for perfectly legal shootings.
Mm-hmm.
With a body cam.
How do you think you are going to be? So whether or not right, wrong, or indifferent, if you got alcohol on board and then do, God forbid, have to use that pistol, you do not look in a good light already by the time you go to that jury.
Yeah, and you know, again, I'm not a lawyer. I would urge you guys to look up U.S. Concealed Carry Association. They've got all sorts of really good information on there.
Because that varies by state. Definitely check out your state stuff, too, because that's all different. I mean, you go to states like Illinois, and it's completely different than us. Well,
I wanted to add earlier, because you were asking questions about open carry. The same goes for open carry in Missouri. Just because it's legal in the state does not mean every county it's legal or every city it's legal. They have their own right to make those laws. So if you're going to open carry, conceal carry, check your laws everywhere you're going because they're all different. So,
and talking about that, and you know, if you do have to use it also, just remember that just because you might get off on something on a criminal charge, the victim's family can still sue you.
There's civil in there as well.
You could be 100% justified, and people get taken to court for it all the time. So, again, we're not lawyers. I don't really want to go too far into that because it's going to vary state by state, you know, what the advice is going to be. But really take that part and get trained on that as well as your firearm.
Well, because a lot of the training, too, not only, I mean, using your weapon proficiently is a big part of it, but it's also when you can use that weapon. Depending on state, depending on situation. Like I said, not everything is a concealed carry issue. You know what I mean? You can't, pardon my expression, but take a gun to a fist fight. You know what I mean? That's not how that works.
Well, yeah, you got Castle Doctrine in Missouri. There's a lot of laws that, frankly, I'm not smart enough to even read them and comprehend some of them. So you have to go into, there's that part of it too, so. Talk to lawyers, talk to companies. There's companies out there that specifically deal in this.
And at the end of the day, you're going to have to live with whatever happens for the rest of your life, whether you're free, whether you're in jail. And my deal that I tell people a lot is like, look, if I come home and you're carrying my TV out of my house, I'm probably not going to kill you over my TV.
Yeah.
If I come home and you've got my kids at knife point, then, you know, it's going to be a different situation. So, kind of being prepared for everything, thinking about it before it happens is pretty important too.
Well, one of the training things I went to, the guy made a really good point about the responsibility of concealed carry and how big of issue it really is. And, you know, there's all different people in the world, you know, and I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent, but confrontational, this, that. You have to realize how big a responsibility you have by choosing to carry, which is a good thing, but take it as a responsibility and don't be that confrontational guy. Know what situations to be in or get yourself out of. You know, it's not always a stand there and debate with somebody because there's a lot of craziness in the world now. that can escalate quickly over something dumb. You know, make it for the right purposes and don't be putting yourself in those situations to have to make a hard decision.
For sure. And going back to the legal advice, I'd tell you this isn't legal advice, but I know there's all sorts of companies that offer SDLI, self-defense liability insurance, that will help you out with things like representation if you do have to use your firearm. I'd urge people to look into that. It may be right for you. It may not be. I don't know what the cost is. But it's definitely something when you're looking at the whole picture of concealed carry that may be an important factor to think about.
Even if you don't, or just thinking about it, it's good to know. They got a lot of resources on how stuff really works, you know, things like that. Like we always talked about, not to get too deep into it, but you're not going to use your pistol in self-defense and not get questioned over it. You're going to get questioned, but it's how you react, how you choose to react, different things like that.
That'd be a great episode if we can get in contact with them one of these days, get them on and, you know, get somebody who may not be state specific, but give more of a focused, you know, overview
of what they, because to be honest with you, it changes so much with the laws always changing and different states coming on board with the different carry stuff, just to know what they really truly do cover. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but definitely look into it. It's for no more than it costs, it could save you down the road.
So we're at the point now where we've talked to people about picking a firearm, picking a holster for it, being secure, kind of different ways to carry it. Kind of to wrap it up, the main thing, if you get anything out of this, is train, and then train some more. How often would you recommend somebody go into the range? Once a month? Or
It's hard for me because I have the opportunity to do it frequently, you know, out. I got the range at our house, so I can do it more than the average person. But I think it's a good combination of as much as you possibly can and afford. But if you can't afford to go to the range and use live rounds all the time, you can get the Mantis or whatever, different systems for $100, $200 that can provide you dry firing, which is, at the end of the day, the fundamentals of everything.
Well, and it would seem to me, and I don't want to tell anybody what to do or what not to do with their kids. My boys are 9 and 10, and they shoot 22 pistols right now. They're getting used to them, so I'm not telling anybody what to do with their kids. But that Mantis system, the kids could even use that in a controlled environment, the laser system, or somebody that's new to shooting, you know, where they can practice operating the weapon, taking it off safety, aiming it, all without the fear of the recoil until they get used to it also.
And a lot of these trainings and even the police departments are using a lot of virtual stuff that uses the same technology because it's constant training in different scenarios. So it's an all around good start.
And I know there's places coming up and hell, maybe we might get one day, but have some sort of simulators in there with different training. If you can get into a simulator, they've got all sorts of shoot, don't shoot scenarios that'll come up.
Are the best because I've seen, I haven't done very many of them. I wish I could do more of them, but it gives you things that you don't think about, you know, that you can do in a controlled environment to make your brain think about different things. Because at the end of the day, it's a stressful situation. By being as most prepared as possible, by seeing that, it puts you in a more prepared situation if you ever see that later.
Well, and if you watch, you know, Navy SEALs or anybody that shoots pistols tactically, the last thing they do after they engage the target and, you know, finish their engagement is they look both ways to make sure there's not another shooter or somebody behind them, which is something really important to think about.
Yeah, and concealed carry in general, I find when I'm carrying a pistol, which is most of the time, you should be even more aware of your surroundings. No different than events, different things. Be aware of your surroundings so you're not put in a bad situation.
All the way down to when they're shooting with optics or no optics, iron sights, they're using both eyes open. And most people don't know that, and it's so they can see all the time. I mean, you got peripherals that if you have one eye closed, you just cut off that whole side of your body and you don't know what's going on. So
And that's, it's hard to get used to. That's where the training comes in, because you won't see any new shooter that just does that without training.
Yeah.
No. I mean, that I've seen anyways.
All right. Well, we had a viewer question of the week. It was from Vincent this week, and we actually kind of got to his question pretty early on in the episode, so we'll make sure to reach out to Vincent, get him a hat or a shirt. But Vincent was asking, what are our most critical dry fire practices? And we kind of went over the mana system, snap caps. Is there anything else, Brett, that you can think of?
What I like to do at home is if you have mantis, no mantis, whatever, just using your firearm, your handgun, get as close as possible to the mirror or wall and try to practice your dry fire in a close proximity. Because Kevin alluded earlier that, you know, it's always within 7 yards or closer. And the most stressful situation is when an attacker's coming after you with a knife, gun, whatever it may be, and you're within a foot of them.
Yeah.
And you're trying to stumble. You're trying, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where you really need to unholster your firearm and use that firearm before pointing at them and aiming. There is no aiming in that scenario.
What I can 100% tell you, and I am not a trainer, the way I was trained, and again, it was a SWAT team officer, and he prefaced this by saying you're 7 yards or 21 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody with a knife can get to you faster than you can shoot them, typically, at that 21 feet. That's why it's the distance where it's okay to shoot somebody with a knife. Again, not legal advice. Follow up. Do your own research. But per my training, he said if somebody's running at you, your weak hand, you get your elbow and arm up in front of them, and you don't even draw and extend. You rotate from the hip, and you're shooting underneath your arm because you're hitting body masses that are coming towards you.
Well, when somebody's close, you don't want to extend anyways because you don't want them having your gun.
Well, yeah, and that's part of putting the arm up, and there's not a lot of arteries on the outside. So if you're going to take a knife strike, the bone on the outside of your forearm is a good place to take one versus your core.
And if you're so close to somebody, if you push your gun against their body, you can push that slide out of battery and it won't fire. So that's one thing that you don't even train for most of the time. So that's why if you put that arm up, it keeps your gun behind that, at least, you know, the thickness of your arm.
Yeah.
So you're not pushing against their body in that scenario if you ever have to get in there. That's probably what I would critically practice if I was dry firing, is in a really close range.
Yeah, my thought would be on that. We talked about a lot of it, but if you want to talk about the most critical part of it, would be drawing from your holster.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like what Brett's saying, super close or not, but drawing from your holster. Because if you go from a ready position to shooting, is not a reality in concealed carry. 99% of the time, it's going to be a unholstering and fairly quick deal. So make that the base of your training. You have a holster, you know your gun's going to be in the holster. Whether it's quickly or not, your gun has to come out of that holster to use it. Whether it's within a split second or 10 seconds, practice the unholstering part of it.
Mine is not even that far, just pistol shooting, well, shooting fundamentals in general. Everybody that I've ever taught how to shoot a pistol, they naturally want to, when they engage the trigger, they want to put it in the bend. And you need to be pulling with the pad of your finger. Because and long range shooters will tell you the same thing. When you get it here, you're torquing the gun. It's not a straight back pull. It's more of a torque. So you want to make sure the pad of the finger is actually engaging the trigger, not the bend.
And that's a good point, not to this question, but I will bring it up real quick because we talked about guns. Each gun has a different length to that trigger. Depending on your hand size, that goes, what you just said, goes into picking the pistol as well. If only the tip of your finger can reach that to pull the trigger, that's not the gun for you. Or vice versa, if you have super big hands and your finger has to be wrapped half around it to shoot it, it's probably not the gun for you either. So that's a very good point in picking a pistol too that we really didn't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. We're just going to touch on it real quick. We're not going to go down a political rabbit hole, but we just want to express our condolences to all the victims of the parade shooting that happened right after we recorded our previous episode. And you know, we're not going to get into the political debate on it, but thank God for the law enforcement and, you know, even those civilians that tackled the shooter running away. I mean, those guys are heroes, and hell, if they reached out, I think we should give those guys a holster. I don't know if they're gun owners or not, but
yeah, 100%. And those are local guys, local to us. It'd be cool to talk to them. And like I said, it's all part of training as real world scenarios on what happened. It'd be cool to pick their brain on how it really came apart, you know, so to speak, and what really happened. Because in that big of an event, it don't matter if it's there, a stadium or wherever, in that big of an event, that's a really hard situation to defend from a concealed carry aspect. Because if you,
oh, it'd be scary.
Because if you think about it, from a, the cops are rushing over to this situation that obviously never should have happened. But you, as a concealed carry person, if you draw your pistol and you're, how do they know that you're not part of the problem in that situation?
Yeah,
right.
I won't get into more than that, but it's something to think about, and it puts you in a weird situation other than just a two or three people around situation.
And kind of coming back to being prepared, and I don't like big crowds anyway, so like if I go to a Chiefs game, I might have a beer or two. I'm not carrying, but when you're going to these big things, don't get as drunk as you can. You don't have to drink all the beers. You know, try and keep your head on your, you know, shoulders. Think about the way out. Like if you're in a store and somebody comes in the front door shooting, well, guess what? There's loading docks, there's side exits to all these buildings. You know, just try and be tactically mindset. And I can't imagine being down there with your kids, trying to get your kids out, trying to avoid being trampled. So,
and the kids is what makes it the hardest there, because no matter what and how bad you want to protect it, you got to protect your kids, and there's kids everywhere. You know, it's just a...
it's a big scenario. My wife and kids were down there, and my wife's calling me during this situation, and she's made it to the parking garage, and her phone doesn't work. So she's trying to explain to me that there's a shooting going on, and her phone shuts off at the same time. So my mind goes different places. I don't know what's going on. Because I was at work. I didn't know anything going on. I was at the gun shop. And I turn on the TV, and they're talking about it everywhere. I finally get her back on the phone, and luckily she's already made it to her car, and they're trying to leave. But it's a very scary and real situation that I wish would have never happened. But me and her have had a lot of conversations about it.
Yeah, so. And maybe we can get into some more of that on later episode, you know, being prepared. And again, we're not trainers. I'd love to get some people on here. You know, I've got some ideas and thoughts on it, but you know, that's for another episode, because mm-hmm. we'll go down the rabbit hole on that one. What I would like to tell everybody is we got the promo code, good for the website, 15% off if you use MRT Podcast. So Muddy River Tactical MRT Podcast will get you 15% off anything on the website. So that could be holsters, clips, we got shirts, hats, belts, all sorts of stuff. So anything you might find on there, check it out. There's all sorts of videos you can get on there, and I won't speak specifically to where or where not you may be able to see videos.
And we have a tab on our website now that has it's a video tab, and you can go to our different stuff. But like,
got links for all the major stuff where you might want to check us out.
Yeah, you can find us in all sorts of places, but we're doing videos on not only new guns, but the podcast, but also situations like this and just self-defense in general. So
I do want to say that the MRT podcast for 15% off for the holsters can be used in the gun shop for holsters. They just have to bring it to me when they check out. Just let me know that you want to use the discount code for holsters only. It obviously won't work for guns.
Only.
It won't work for guns or anything else like that, just for the holster side of it. But and I'll get you taken care of.
And do you still do free autographs? Is that?
Oh, absolutely. So absolutely. We're starting to charge for them eventually, but right now they're still free.
Okay.
It's a crazy transition though, because at the end of the day, I'm just still an idiot. You know what I mean? But I walked in the gun shop.
I second that.
I walk in the gun shop. What was it, last week? I don't know. It may have been the day after we recorded the last podcast. And this guy's in there. Brett's helping him, choosing a gun. And he's like, yeah, I saw the guy that owns this building on there. And I'm just not even paying attention. I'm doing my stuff. I stand up. He goes, oh, that's you. like a complete shock. And it's just, it's not funny, but in some ways it is, because
it's humbling is what it is.
It really is humbling that how many people watch that stuff. And that's a great thing. But the guy was like almost in shell shock that I was there. Like,
well, I'm in shell shock when you're there, too. So
I was going to say, when you show up three days a month, that's like hitting the lottery.
Yeah,
that's on his side. I show up in the holster side, but not in the gun shop side very much.
All right, guys. Well, been another great episode. Everybody, reach out to us. We need some more viewer questions. I want to give away some hats. We got some cool new podcast shirts coming along. I want to give some of these things away. So hit us up, email us, call us, you know, get us on the website. ask us questions. We'd love to answer you. If you are some sort of tactical trainer, got some advice for us, something we didn't touch, you know, you're an expert in the field, give us a call. We'll talk to you. We'd love to get as many people on here that know more than us as we can.
Yeah, and as we go, we're going to have more guests in different places. And like I said, we'd love to have some trainers, but there's not a one trainer that's an end-all, be-all. You know, they all have different opinions and do things different ways. So it's great just to talk to multiple people. So definitely reach out to us.
Excellent. Well, enjoy our intro and outro music by Quentin Cox & Co., a local band. Check them out if you can. And as always, Kevin, you want to tell them your famous last line before we go?
Keep practicing and always be prepared.
Oh, boy. All right. We'll see you guys next week.
See you, everybody. See ya.